Okay, we're going to begin here on the top of Kaf Tedem and Aleph, the two dots. Gemara is in the midst of discussing the setup of our Mishnah about what is the Melachloket between Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Akiva in the Mishnah. We have two statements by the Tanaim, which is, first of all, Ptilat Abeget Shkipha Velol Hiv Hava, and Rabbi Eliezer Merit Tmeahi, then it's definitely Tmeah, Ve'ein Madlikim Ba. So those are two separate statements. One is that it's Tmeah, second one is that Ein Madlikim Ba. Akiva Omer Tohorahi, that is Tohor, and Madlikimba, you're allowed to use it for lighting. So the question is, are the two halachot correlated, or are they separate reasons? So we first attempted to explain the machloket about Tuma and Tahara, about the question of whether Kippul is Mivatel the Tuma, or is not Mivatel the Tuma. So does the original Beged intact or not intact? And that's the question of Tuma. With regards to Hadaka, we had the suggestion of Rav Adar Bar Ava, that we're talking about Gimel al Gimel Mitzumtzamot. That they're exactly 3x3 etzbaot, and Biyom Tov Shechaliot Erev Shabbat. Skinan, and the question of being Mesik B'Shivrei Kelim in the sheet of Rabbi Yehuda and Ula, that was the Machloket. Then we add Rava. Rava made a suggestion over here, Tosso thinks the Girsu should be Rabba. Time with the Rabbi Eliezer, the Fi Shein Malikim B'Ptila Shein Mechurechet, V'lo B'Sparat Dutim Shein Mechurechim. That the reason has nothing to do with the Tuma. It all has to do with the readiness of the wick to burn on Shabbat. The Tuma's issue is one issue. And the lighting of candles on Shabbat, any Erev Shabbat, is about how prepared the wick is. So that was the second way we had to describe the Machloket. Today, later today, we'll get to a third way to explain it. So now, I'm Rabbi Yehuda Marav. Misikim b'kelim, ven misikim b'shivrei kelim, divrei Rabbi Yehuda. So in the explanation of Rav Ava, we bumped into this Shita of Rabbi Yehuda, which is that one is allowed to, on Yom Tov, use Kelim for the fire, but not use Shivrei Kelim, broken shards, for the fire on Yom Tov. The difference being that the Kelim were whole going into Yom Tov, therefore they are Mukhan. They are usable, they are not Muksa, because a person had their mind on these objects going into Yom Tov. Shivrei Kelim, if they break on Yom Tov, the shards are what are known as Nolad. Something new that happened on Yom Tov, and something new that happens on Yom Tov is Muksa Mipnei Nolad. Rabbi Yehuda says, if you use Kelim that were readily available, you knew about coming into Yom Tov, that's fine, they're not Muksa. Shivrei Kelim, something that happened on Yom Tov itself, that's Muksa, you may not use those for your fire. Rabbi Shimon Matir. On the other hand, Rabbi Shimon says it's totally fine. Rabbi Shimon doesn't have the dinim muksa. Mesigin bitmarim. One can use dates to fuel the fire. Achlan, on the other hand, if he eats the dates, emisigin begarinehem. They're pits. After you've eaten them, you may not use as fuel for the fire. Divrei Rabbi Yehuda. That's Rabbi Yehuda's position again, for the same reason, which is that the dates themselves were available already coming into Yom Tov, therefore you had your mind on them, they're not muksa. On the other hand, the garinim were not available to you going into Yom Tov, and therefore, they cannot be used to fuel the fire. Rabbi Shimon again is Matir. Now the last one is Mesikim Be'Guzim. You can use for fuel of the fire nuts that were available to you coming into Yom Tov. Achlan, on the other hand, if you eat them, Ein Mesikim Klipotehem. You may not use their shells for the fuel for the fire, Divrei Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Shimon again is Matir. V'tzricha. Why do we need them to argue in three different scenarios? Scenario of Shivrei Kelim, the pits of the dates, and the shells of the nuts. So Mar says, the Iyashmein on Kamaita. Had we only known the case by Kelim, Bahayi Kamar Rav Yehuda, Mishum Demi Kara Kli, Vashta Shevir Kli. Because in the first case, you clearly have a different item here. You originally had a whole Kli, now you have shards. V'havalei nolad, v'asur. That's clearly something new that developed in Yom Tov, and it's asur. Aval tamarim demikara garinehem, v'ashta garinim. In the beginning, the tamarim had pits inside of them, and now they have pits. All you did was make the pits accessible. By eating the tamarim, you now made them accessible. Eima shapir tami. I would have thought that's not called nolad according to Rabbi Yehuda. Mashvon, that it is. Even that is called nolad according to Rabbi Yehuda. V'yishmein and garinin. Had you only told me about the pits case, having amino de mikara michasian, originally they were encapsulated, v'hashta miklan, and now you ate them and you exposed them. Aval klipe egozim, we're talking about nuts of a shell, de mikara miglo, originally they were available to eat. They're the outside of the nut. There's nothing changed. You've just taken out the food that's inside them. Let us say that that's not nolad. Therefore, we needed all three of these cases. And the opposite would be true if you started with the latter of the three cases. Then, according to Rabbi Shimon, I would have thought, in that case, he's matir. But in the case that is more like nolad, he wouldn't be matir. So I need both sides of here to show you how far-reaching both Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon's positions are. Rabbi Shimon, by the Shivrei Kelim, still says it's not mukseh. And Rabbi Yehuda still says it's mukseh by the case of the shells of the nuts. Vaha, the Rav, la beferush itmar. Rav's statement here, because we started out Mar, is Amar Yehuda Amar Rav, who brings these three braitot that include Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Yehuda, who has not said explicitly, Ela mechlolo itmar. It was an inference from Rav. The Rav achal tamre. Rav was eating dates. The shadak shiato. And he was throwing away the pits. He throws them either into the buchia or the buvia. He threw them into some sort of pan or a coal brazier. V'amarle rabichia barpachte ben gedolim kenegdo b'yom tov asur. If you were doing this on Yom Tov, it would not be permitted. This was a weekday. And Rav was taking the pits after he was eating them and throwing them into the pan, the coal brazier, into the fire, basically, to fuel the fire. And his uncle, Rabbi Chiya, says to him, listen, that's okay because it's a weekday right now. But had this been Yom Tov, it would not have been permitted based on the shita of Rabbi Yehuda. So kibla mine, olo kibla mine. Did Rav accept Rabbi Chiya's statement or Rav that he noted to him? Tashma. Tachiyata Rav the Bavel. Rav started out learning in Eretz Yisrael. He was a Talmud of Rabbi in Eretz Yisrael. And then moves to Bavel. Achal Tamare, he was eating dates. V'shada kashiyata l'chiyuta. And he threw the pits out to the animals. He gave the animals to eat from the pits. He got them to eat, and then he took them out as food for the animals. So Mari Lav, what are the pits that we're talking about here? Are we talking about piarsiyata velo kibla? Are we talking about these very good dates, ripe and tasty dates, that when you eat them, they easily pull away from the pit? Because they're fully ripe, and because they're a good date, and you eat them, they separate away from the pit, and what's left is simply the pit. There is no date stuck to the pit. So now if you're left with nothing on the pit is exactly what we were describing before. It's a Rabbi Yehuda, you have something called Nolad. Pit is now a totally new entity. And what was Rav doing? Rav was still carrying around a Yom Tov and giving it to the animals. That means he doesn't think it's Muksa. That's the case. V'lo kibla. He did not accept Rabbi Chiya's note to him. So when it says, lo, they're ba'armiato. They are non-ripe dates or not good quality dates, where when you eat them, they don't separate well from the pit. So when you have the pits afterwards, the pits still have residuals of the date on them. They have residuals of the date on them, then the pits are still not Muksa because they still contain part of the date, which is, we know, Ra'ui, when you were coming into Yom Tov, he already had his mind on those dates. And that's not mukse. So that's why you can't have mayu. And since they are Ra'uim, because of the fruit that is on them, then he did accept Rabbi Chiya's ha'ara, but just, this wasn't a case where Rabbi Chiya's din was applicable, because pits were not independent of the peirot over here. So I'm really Shmuel Bar Chanan, Rabbi Yosef, the Rabbi Yehuda, Damar Misikin Ve'Kelim Misikin B'Shivrei Kelim. According to the position of Rabbi Yehuda, that you're allowed to use Kelim and not these shards of Kelim, Kelim the Adik Ba'Purta, Avalei Shivrei Kelim. Let's see what happens. You throw the Kli into the fire. 1 minute, or 1 second after it's in the fire takes to the Kli. It's now a Shever Kli. If it's a Shever Kli, now you have Muksa in the fire. Okay, so I have Muksa in the fire. The problem with that is, if you then stoke the fire, or you turn the fire over, you're going to be moving Muksa now, because the item is no longer a Kli, it's now a Shever Kli, it's Muksa. You're not going to be able to stoke the fire or move the fire around. The Avad Kirav Matno. You're right. It is true, that would be the case. But you have to act, or you have to use the advice of Rav Matna, which is, Davra Manatna Marav, it seems, Shinashrumin Adeka L'Tanur. Their ovens were outside, and there was a palm tree in the yard, and some of the wood or some of the leaves from the palm tree fall into the oven. So when they fall into the oven on Yom Tov, that's Muksa, because they separated from the tree on Yom Tov, and that's something that you did not have in mind going into Yom Tov, and now they're in the Tanur. So now you have the same problem that we described before. You have firewood, fuel that is mukzeh. So how do you stoke the fire? How do you move it around? B'yom tov, mirabeh itzim muchanim emisikan. You do is you take a large number of pieces of wood, fuel that is not mukzeh, that you had in mind to use going into yom tov. You have a pile of wood there that you plan to use that's not mukzeh. And then you throw it into the fire. And since now there's more wood in there that is mutar, versus the leaves that had separated, or the wood that had gone in it that was asur, then it's fine to move it, because you're moving the rove. The rove is stuff that is not muksa, and therefore it is permitted. Rashi says that you're basically mevatlan berove. You're mevatal it through you putting in a rove. Right, it's generally mevatlan rove lechatchilo. We don't do that, but over here,
the Gemara in Beitza says that the din of Eimevatlin Isur Lechatchilo only applies to Dine Deoraita. By Dine de Rabbanan, it does not apply. And over here, we're talking about a Din de Rabbanan of Mukse. On the other hand, the Gemara then continues and says, well, according to those that believe that even in Dine de Rabbanan, Eimevatlin Isur Lechatchilo, how do you explain this case? The answer is that over here, the fire is consuming the Isur. And so the Isur is no longer going to be Be'en, it's not going to be there. And therefore, you can be mevatel iser lechatchila because the iser is dissipating as it burns.
The problem is not the iser itself. The iser itself is burning in the fire, and extra wood that comes in here makes it mutar. And that would be the same suggestion with regards to the shivrei kelim. When the shivrei keli, which is mukzeh that you cannot stoke, you can't move the fire, you'll add in additional firewood that is mutar, and that will allow you to stoke the fire to move the fire around. Right. Oh, I mean that there's already mutar wood in there. Yeah, that might be fine. It's not that you have to, after the fact, put in majority. As long as the majority of what you're stoking is mutar, then it's fine. So Tosafot points out over here, which is interesting. He says, we know from other places, early on in the Masechta, other places, at Shas, Rav definitely subscribes to the position of Rabbi Yehuda, of Nolad, according to Rabbi Yehuda. He holds that it's mukse, Nolad is mukse, like Rabbi Yehuda. So why is the Gemara here saying that it's an inference and not an explicit statement? We have explicit statements from Rav that he subscribes to Nolad like Rabbi Yehuda. So he says that the Gemara's question here is not whether he holds of Nolad of Rabbi Yehuda, but does he hold of this Nolad of Rabbi Yehuda that goes as far as to say that the pits of the dates and the shells of the nuts are still considered to be Nolad? So the Gemara says that's what the example they bring for Rav. The example they're bringing for Rav over here is about dates. Because that's the specific incident that we're interested in. We want to know that if he thinks there's no lad, even by dates. So Tosafot says, well, now the problem is that the Gemara only brought up case of dates. How do we know that he really thinks that's true by egozim as well? By nuts, which we said was the most extreme form of Rabbi Yehuda's position, that even though the nuts and the shells are in front of you, they still consider to be muksa after you take the shells off. How do we know that? Well, from Rav, we only know about dates. We don't know anything about egozim. Tosafot says, even though the Gemara made it into a tzrichuta, nevertheless, mitam ze lifnei emet, eini ra lo lechaleg b'neihem. Truthfully, there's no reason to divide between them. And once we know Rav subscribes to one of these types of Rabbi Yehuda's type of muksa and nolad, then we're going to assume that if he holds by dates that way, he's also going to hold by the nuts that way. Right, that's what it says. You have to say that there is some sort of tzvichuta to explain it, but once we know that they're all packaged together, then we can say that Rav, if Rav subscribes to one, that doesn't... It is. I think it's not simple what Tosafot's saying. Yes, that's what I'm suggesting. I still think Yeshua is right in some way that it's not so simple what Tosafot says, because even when you say we agree that all of these are the halacha this way, but the difference still exists. It's not like we said that the difference isn't there. The difference is there, but despite the fact that the halacha is this way. Alright, so now Rav Amnuna. Alright, so now again we have two answers so far. We had the first answer of Rav Adarbava. The second answer of Rava about what Machloket is about, and now we have a third answer, which is Rav Amnuna. Rav Amnuna Amar Hacha bePachot miShlosha Shlosha Askinan. We're dealing with a baguette that is less than 3x3 tefachim. Take note of that. The original answer of Rav Adarbava is we're talking about a 3x3 etzbaot baguette. Now Rav Amnuna says, no, we're talking about something that's less than 3x3 tefachim. Umikulei matlaniyot shanukan. And we're talking about the way that we deal with rags. It's a special din in rags. And that's what's being discussed in the Mishnah. Vazda Rabbi Eliezer the Tamei, v'Rabbi Akiva the Tamei. And Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Akiva subscribe to their positions with regards to rags, and that's what influences their positions in our Mishnah. Now, Rav Amnuna is only addressing the issue to explain why there's a difference in the din of Tehora and Tmeiah, not about why you're allowed to light with them or not allowed to light them on Shabbat. Rav Amnuna is going to subscribe to Rava's position that the machloket in Hadlakah revolves around whether this is considered to be a prepared wick or a not prepared wick. So in that way, he has no difference from Rava. But on the other hand, with regards to the Beged itself, he's coming to explain why there's a difference in the din of Tehora and Tmeyah, not about why you're allowed to light with them or not allowed to light them on Shabbat. And that is Tetzan. Pachot mishlosha shlosha. You have something that's less than 3x3 tefachim. Rashi says, the ilu shlosha shlosha chashive velo batle. Says if it's above 3x3 tefachim, you don't have any impact on it. You can't impact it. Above 3x3 tefachim, it would always be chashuv, because it's inherently chashuv, but it's got significance even without what you do. Shitkinu lepkak bo et amerchatz. They're using it for a plug, a drain plug. Ulanayar bo et hakdeira. Or for wiping out hands, the pots. Ukaneach bo et arechayim. Or to wipe down the mills. Ben min amuchan, ben she'enu min amuchan, tamei. According to Divrei Rabbi Eliezer says, doesn't matter if it's something that's prepared, something that's not prepared, tamei. Yeshua amar, ben min amuchan, ben shlo min amuchan, whether it's prepared or not prepared, tahor. Rabbi Akiva amar, min amuchan, tamei. If it's prepared, it's tamei. Shlo min amuchan, tahor. If it's not prepared, it is tahor. I'm purposely not describing what prepared and not prepared is, because the Gemara is about to do that. Everybody agrees. Zorko be'ashpa. He throws it into the garbage. Divrei Hakol tahor. If he wants to use something as a rag, it's a piece of cloth that's that small. He throws it into the garbage before or after he uses it. It's completely tahor, because it's clear that he's not machshivit. That he doesn't consider it to be a piece of cloth that is significant enough for him to store it. That happens, where it's less than 3x3 tefachim, you throw it in the garbage, it loses utility. If somebody picks it up, it restarts the utility. So therefore, if it was tameh beforehand, it would be tahor, and then that person prospectively would have an object that could become tameh. But it does remove the tumah when you throw it into the garbage, because you're the owner of the item, and whatever you think about it, or whatever you do with it, is significant. Once someone else can take it and then make it significant, they change the status once again. But it's a reset. It's a new status from where you threw it in the garbage, they pick it up. But if you handed it directly to them, then that would be retaining its original status. On the other hand, heinicho b'kufsa, if he specifically stores it in a chest or in a box, meaning that he's making it clear that this martut, this rag, is important to him, then it's clearly tameh. It retains its status as a beged, because he is treating it like something that is a beged, that's something that's chashuv. So on the extremes, if he throws it in the garbage, clearly tahor according to everyone, he keeps it in the box, then it's tameh according to everyone, because it hasn't lost its status. Where do they argue? So there, divrei kol tameh lo nechlegu ela shetlo'o b'magod, o she'nichol acharei adelet. The machloket revolves around these two scenarios. One scenario is he throws it behind the door. The other one is that he hangs it on a frame or on some sort of peg that he hangs it on in the house. In that instance, the question revolves, what is his interaction with this rag? What is he thinking about this rag? Now, in terms of hierarchy, the hierarchy is kufsa. You put it into a box or a storage area, it's clear that you think it's important. Next down on the list is the magod. If you hang it on the peg or the frame, that's the next scenario. Then after that is acharei adelet. And the bottom of the rung is throwing it into the ashpa. So you have four levels of interaction with this rag in assigning its significance. The most significant is putting it away and storing it. The least, of course, is throwing it into the garbage, where it's clear that you have no connection with it, you don't think that it's chashuv. In between, we have these two cases. Again, the higher of the two, where you have more reason to think that he's storing it, is where he hangs it up. And the lower of those two is if he puts it behind the door, that's like one step away from being in the garbage. So if you can ask them, I think that you're right. If you can ask him and he can clearly say that I think it's important, I'm going to use them, then there's nothing to talk about. Question here is that through his actions, can we read something into the thought process? So now, the Gemara says, Rabbi Eliezer Sabar, meet the clothes are called ashpa date alui. Since he didn't throw it in the garbage, all the three categories that are above that, then according to Rabbi Eliezer, everything is tameh, everything is considered to be chashuv. As long as you don't throw it in the garbage, that's considered to be storage. Whether you put it behind the door, whether you hang it up, whether you put it into a box, that's all considered to be storage according to Rabbi Eliezer and his Tamei. So my, the korile shalom min amuchan. So Rabbi Eliezer in his terminology said, whether it's min amuchan, whether it's enu min amuchan, they are considered to be Tameim. What was he referencing? So now I'm going to read it like Rashi reads it, which is, according to Rabbi Eliezer, there are four levels. When it comes to kufsa, you place it in a kufsa, that's called muchan. You place it on the magod, or you place it acharei adelet, That's eno mina muchan, those two stages. Ashpa is out of the picture. So according to Rabbi Elazar, you're a tamei when you say ben mina muchan. Muchan means if you put it into a kufsa. Ben shalom mina muchan means either you put it on the magod or you put it at rechorei adelet. You're still tamei in all of those three cases. That's the way Rashi reads Rabbi Elazar. Then along comes Rabbi Yeshua. Rabbi Yeshua savar midloi nichu b'kufsa b'tulei badle. So like Shaul is saying, Rabbi Yeshua says that if you don't put it away in a kufsa, then you've relegated it to insignificance. As long as you don't put it into a kufsa, it's by definition insignificant. And therefore, the definition of muchan and lo muchan is going to be based on that. My karle muchan. So the gabe ashpa muchan hu. Versus the ashpa, versus the garbage, these things are considered muchan. Therefore, according to Rabbi Yoshua, garbage, ashpa, will be considered eino mina muchan. That's not considered something that you're going to keep. But magod and achrei adalet, those are considered to be muchan. And therefore, both of them will be tohor, because he says ben mina muchan, ben shalom mina muchan, tohor. Then along comes Rabbi Akiva and says Rabbi Akiva bitlo b'magod. If he puts it up on the peg or on the frame, salvar k'Rabbi Eliezer. He holds like Rabbi Eliezer. That's considered to be muchan. Benichol achrei adelet. When you put it behind the door, salvar like Rabbi Yeshua. He holds like Rabbi Yeshua that that's shalom mina muchan. So therefore, Rabbi Akiva is addressing the middle two cases. By kufsa, he calls that muchan. By ashpa, he calls it eno mina muchan. The middle two cases, he divides up. He says that by magod, that's also muchan, like the kufsa. And achrei adelet is eno mina muchan, like the ashpa. And so therefore, each of them addresses the four levels, depending on their opinion. Again, for Rabbi Elezer and Rabbi Yoshua, there's no difference in the two middle levels. According to Rabbi Akiva, there is a difference in the middle levels. He splits it and says, one like Rabbi Yoshua, one like Rabbi Eliezer. Now, that's the way Rashi explains it. Tosafot takes issue with Rashi's explanation because he says, the Gemara in other places says Rabbi Akiva is the machria here. Rabbi Akiva is the decisive factor, because he splits the difference. But according to the way Rashi is explaining it, Rabbi Akiva is not really splitting the difference. Because Rabbi Elazar believes Eino Mino Muchan is both cases in the middle, and Rabbi Yeshua believes that the middle cases are Muchan. And then Rabbi Akiva is taking one piece from Rabbi Yeshua, one piece from Rabbi Elazar, but he's not being Machria like either one of them in a full sense. And therefore, Tosafot says, only discussion here is about the middle two cases. And muchan is defined as magod, according to everyone. And eno mina muchan is described as achrei adelet, according to everybody. And then the statements that we said before, meuchan and eno muchan, relate to those two middle cases. And then Rabbi Akiva is really a machria then, because Rabbi Akiva is taking one muchan like one of the opinions, and eno mina muchan the other case, and that's the same definition that Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Yeshua had for it. The way Rashi is reading it, Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Yeshua are not talking about the same muchan and eno muchan. Their definitions of muchan and eno muchan are totally different. And because they're different, of course they're going to have different opinions. They're not even talking apples and apples. They're talking apples and oranges because of the way they define it. So Tosafot does not like the way Rashi explains it and says that everybody agrees that muchan means magot and eno mina muchan means achorei ha-delet. And then, why did the Gemara over here ask muchan? It says, well, in relationship, magot and achorei ha-delet, in relation to each other, can't really be called muchan and lo muchan. So the Gemara says the reference points are the outer bounds, which are the ashpa and the kufsa. Those are the reference points, and in reference to them, they're considered to be muchan and eno muchan. The Gemara says, then, v'hadar bei Rabbi Akiva legabei Rabbi Yeshua. Later on, Rabbi Akiva reverses his opinion to agree with Rabbi Yeshua. Mimai, how do you know that? Amarava miktani. Our Mishnah is an indication that Rabbi Akiva subscribed to Rabbi Yeshua's opinion, because our Mishnah says, tilat habeged. It's a tilah of the beged. My area, the tani ptilat ha-beged. Why does it say ptilat ha-beged? Litne ptilat shel-beged. Say that it's a ptilat of the beged. My ptilat ha-beged. Daidayin beged hu. Because if you say ptilat shel-beged, that means that something was once a piece of clothing, and now it's a ptilat. Something that derived from a beged. That's something that you originally considered to be a beged, and now you made it into a ptilat, so it's no longer a beged. But when you call something ptilat ha-beged, it means that the wick is a beged. It still retains its status or shame ha-beged. Even though now it's a wick, it's still significant enough to be a beged. It sounds like you rolled up a beged. And even though you rolled up a beged, it still has a din of being a ptilah now, and it loses its status of tumah. So what Rabbi Akiva is basically now saying is like Rabbi Yoshua. As long as you make it into something that's not a beged, you designate it for a usage that's not a beged, it loses its shame beged. Just like before, when we used the rags, so like you were suggesting, as soon as you plug the bath with it, or you wipe the pans with it, you've changed its status by the usage or the utility. That's Rabbi Yeshua's opinion. That's what Rabbi Akiva in the end is subscribing to. Because as soon as you make it into a wick, even though the wick is still from a beged, it's considered to be a wick already, because you made it into a wick. And that's Rabbi Akiva's opinion. That's how he subscribes to Rabbi Yeshua. Therefore, according to Rav Amnuna, the machloket in the Mishnah is simply, how do you remove the shame beged from it? When you make it into a wick, does that remove the shame beged? So according to Rabbi Akiva, once you've designated it as a wick, that removes it from the world of beged, and it's tahora right away, because you made it into a wick, like making it into a plug for the bath. But, according to Rabbi Eliezer, that's not enough. Rabbi Eliezer told us already that you have to do something that totally takes it out of the world of beged, which is you have to throw it in the garbage, basically. Just making it useful for wiping up things and plugging the bath with, that's not making it insignificant yet. Insignificance is only once you've thrown it out of the house, you throw it into the garbage. So therefore, according to Rabbi Eliezer, that's why it retains its tumah. Now, as far as Shabbos candles, that's not the issue. The issue with Shabbos candles is this a good wick or not a good wick? And that's what the Mishnah says, kipla velo hivava, or kipla vehivava. If you roll it up to be a wick on Shabbat, the argument is not about whether it's a beged, not a beged. The simple question is, did you singe it or did you not singe it? According to Rabbi Eliezer, if you didn't singe it, it's not a wick that you can use for Shabbos. Not because of Tumah. Can't use it for Shabbos because it's not a good wick. It doesn't burn well for Shabbos. You're lighting, not in a case where it's a Yom Tov Erev Shabbos. You're lighting on Chol. So we couldn't care less if it's Tameh. You can light it if it's Tameh. You can light it if you're ruining a Kli. None of that matters because you're doing it all before Shabbat. The only thing that matters is it's going to burn well into the Shabbat. So according to Rabbi Eliezer, if you singed it, it'll burn well and that's you're allowed to use it. Megiva says you don't need to singe it. As soon as you roll it up, it's a good wick and it's a good wick going into the Shabbat. So therefore, their machloket, we're separating here in their machloket between what's the issue by Tumah and Tahara and what the issue is by lighting the candles. As far as Tumah and Tahara, it has nothing to do with the folding or the burning or the singeing. It simply has to do with utility. If you switch it to a wick, is that enough to remove the shame beged from it? According to Rabbi Kiva, yes. According to Rabbi Eliezer, no. Separate issue is Adlaka. Lighting candles going into Shabbat, independent of this issue of Tumah and Tahara, is this a good wick or a bad wick? That depends on whether you singe it or you don't singe it. The singeing has nothing to do with the Tumah and Tahara, and the Tumah and Tahara doesn't care about the singeing either. All it cares about is whether the utility is considered to be significant. According to Rabbi Eliezer, it is. According to Rabbi Yeshua, it's not. So again, now we have three answers as to what their machloket is about. Three Amoraim suggesting what the machloket is. The first Amora was Rav Adar Bava, who suggested we're speaking about 3x3 etzba'ot, exactly. And when it's a Yom Tov, Shechal Yod Be'erev Shabbat, and you're lighting it, as soon as you light it, it loses its significance. As soon as it loses its significance, it's no longer Tmeah, but it also now has a problem that you are burning Shivrei Kelim on Yom Tov, which is the problem, or the Machloket, according to Rav Adar Bava. And the Tumah and Tahara has to do with, again, the designation that kippah, is that enough to take away its shame tumah or not take away its shame tumah? So according to Rav Adar Bava, the machloket about Tumah and Tahara is similar to what we said by Rav Amnuna, which is that is folding it up into a wick enough to remove its shame tumah or not when you're dealing with 3x3 etzba'ot. Now 3x3 etzba'ot is also a question of adlaka of Yom Tov, Shekhal Yod Ve'erev Shabbat, are you burning with Shivrei Kelim? That's Rav Adar Bava's explanation. Rava's explanation is that the question is this a good wick or not? Do you need to singe the wick to be a good wick or not going into Shabbat? It has nothing to do with Yom Tov, Shechal Yod Erev Shabbat. Nothing to do with size, Tumah and Tahara. Tumah and Tahara is one issue. Is designating it as a wick enough? Or do you have to actually use it as a wick before it loses its significance? But with regards to Halakha going into Shabbat, the issue is simply, is this a good wick or is this not a good wick? Rabbi Eliezer says it's not a good wick until you singe it. Rabbi Akiva says it's a good wick even before you singe it. The last explanation is Rav Amnuna. Again, Rav Amnuna agrees that the machloket about hadlaka has to do whether this is a good wick or not a good wick like Rava. But he says the issue by Tumah and Tahara revolves around 3x3 tefachim. Not 3x3 etzba'ot, but 3x3 tefachim. And 3x3 tefachim, once you've gone below 3x3 tefachim, what constitutes making something insignificant? Rabbi Eliezer has a very high standard for what makes something insignificant. You have to throw it in the garbage. Rabbi Akiva, who subscribes to Rabbi Yeshua, has a very low standard or threshold about what makes something insignificant. As long as you don't store it, you don't keep it and show significance with it, it's considered to be insignificant. So making it into a ptilah already makes it insignificant for Rabbi Akiva. According to Rabbi Eliezer, it won't be insignificant until you throw it into the garbage. We're talking about a cloth that's way above 3x3. It's both just below 3x3 tefachim. And that's the three different ways to explain our Mishnah according to these three Amorayim. And the next Mishnah. Lo yikov adam shfoferet shel beitza. Person should not take a shell of an egg and puncture a hole in it. Vimalena shemet. Then fill it with oil. Vidnena pianer. And then put it on top of the lamp. So the lamp has a hole in the center. That's where you fill the oil from. And it has a hole or a mouth on the side where the wick comes out of. You light the wick, and the wick draws the oil from inside the lamp. This individual, instead of filling the lamp with oil, what he does is, he puts an eggshell on top of the center hole in the lamp, punctures a hole in it, and puts the oil into the eggshell. By doing that, what happens over Shabbat is, the oil drips out of the eggshell into the lamp. Basically, what he's doing is, he's metering the fuel that is going into the lamp by putting it in the eggshell. The problem with that is, they're separate. The fuel is separate from the lamp itself. If the fuel's in the lamp, we know the individual won't take the fuel out, because he knows it's a part of the lamp. If the fuel is kept in a separate utensil, like here, the eggshell is holding the fuel outside of the lamp, what we're afraid of is he might need oil for a salad dressing. And he'll come here and take some of the oil from the eggshell, because he won't associate it directly with the lamp, because it's not in the lamp. It's outside the lamp. And therefore, you won't feel like it's taking away fuel from the lamp. So that's it. Lo yikov adam shvechel beitza v'imlan ha'shem yiten al-pianer b'shoshei min ha'tefet. So it drips in. V'afili hi shel cheres. Even if the utensil that is holding the oil on top and dripping it in, it's not an eggshell, but it's cheres, clay. Once it becomes oily and dirty in the kli cheres, you won't touch it. It's ma'us. So that you won't come into contact with. Nevertheless, it's problematic. Problematic because we're afraid he will take it, or even if he won't take it when it's disgusting, he will take it when it's not disgusting. And therefore we are, it goes there in all cases that he may not use this methodology of putting fuel into the lamp. Rabbi Yehuda Matir, Bita says it's not problematic, this is fine, people are not going to take the oil from there. Aval, im chibra yotzer mitchila mutar. If the shell or the cup that you're using to allow the oil to drip into the lamp is attached to the lamp, it's a part and parcel of the lamp, then even the Tanakhama agrees that it's mutar, because there's no way you're going to take the oil out of that. That's now considered to be a part of the lamp. It's part of the lamp. We're not afraid that people are going to take the fuel. They know lamps are muksa on Shabbos. When, what are we afraid of? We're afraid of when they're two separate utensils, that he'll think that the fuel is not really a part of the lamp. Because now it's considered to be one utensil. Now, lo yimalei adam kiara shel shemen, b'itena b'tzad haner. A different way of having the fuel be metered out is you take a bowl and you fill it with oil. You have the lamp that's next to it, and you run a wick between the bowl and the lamp. That wick then will draw the oil from the bowl into the lamp. And then from the lamp, you can burn a wick that will draw that oil that's being brought in. So again, another way to meter the flow of the fuel. The person may not do that. You put the end of the ptila in the bowl, so it draws the fuel through to the lamp. Rabbi Yehuda Matir, and again, Rabbi Yehuda is Matir in this case. Same problem, what are we afraid of? That he's going to come and need oil for his salad dressing. He's going to take the oil from the bowl. Because the bowl is seen as now as a separate entity from the lamp. Because the fuel is not in the lamp, it's separate, and you might think you can use it. Vitzricha, we need both of these cases. Had you taught me about the case of shvoferet shabetza, the eggshell, v'hakam reir abonon, in that case, Rabbanan say, Kevin delomi isa, since it's not disgusting, ata l'spuke mina. He will use it. He'll come and utilize that oil for eating or for salad dressing. Aval shel cheres, dimi isa. But something when cheres becomes disgusting and nobody would want to use that oil for food anymore. Ema modile the Rabbi Yehuda. Maybe they would agree to Rabbi Yehuda's position. The answer is no. V'yishmainan shel cheres. Had you taught me about cheres, about the clay utensil has a hole in it that drips in, v'ha kama Rabbi Yehuda. In the other case, maybe he would agree to the Rabbanan. Maybe in the case where it's a shvoret shel beitza, he would agree to the Rabbanan, because that's not disgusting. So therefore we need both of their opinions. You told me these two cases. Over there, Rabbi Yehuda says that we don't worry about you taking the oil, because in the end, the eggshell is sitting in the lamp. The kli cheres is sitting in the lamp. So even though they're not attached, they still look like one utensil. Aval kiara de mifsiko, by the case of the bowl, where you have the wick running from the bowl into the lamp, over there, they're two separate utensils, and they're sitting separately. Maybe over there, even modilu the rabbanan, he would agree with the rabbanan that you can't do that. So kamash malan, that's not the case. Via shmeinan bahahi, had we only had the case of the bowl with the wick drawing it into the lamp, Bahai Kamrei Rabbanan over there, that's where the Rabbanan say that we worry about him taking the bowl. It's a separate entity. Avobahane Tarti, but the case of the eggshell or the clay that sits on the top of the lamp, Ene Modal Rabbi Yehuda, maybe they agree with Rabbi Yehuda, that's not a problem. Tzricha, therefore we need all three cases in the Mishnah. We need all three cases to teach us, in all these cases, Rabbi Yehuda thinks it's not a problem, and all the three cases, the Rabbanan think it is a problem. Because each case is distinct from the other one, has a different situation, a reality to it, we have all these cases to give you the whole spectrum. A spectrum all the way from something that's totally separate to something that's completely attached. And in that spectrum, Rabbi Yehuda always believes it's mutar, and the Chachamim believe that it is problematic unless it's physically attached.
V'im chibra yotzer mitichla mutar, Tana, im chibra besid o becharasit, if he attaches the eggshell or the pottery on top that's dripping the shemen into the lamp, if he attaches it with plaster or with clay, mutar. V'anan yotzer tanan? Didn't our Mishnah say it has to be done by the professional potter from the start? Ma yotzer? What does that mean, the potter in the Mishnah? It means kein yotzer. You have to attach him the way that a potter would, which means that it is a permanent attachment, something that combines them or makes them into a kli echad.
So now the Gemara continues. Tanya, I'm reading with a pamachat, shifteinu be'aliyat beit nitzeh belod. We were staying for Shabbat in the upper chamber, the upper floor of the house of Beit Nitzeh. It says the name of the family below. They brought us an eggshell. We filled it up with oil, and then we punctured a hole in it. And then we put it on top of the lamp. And in that gathering was Rabbi Tarfon, Vizikainim, Rabbi Tarfon, all the elders. And they didn't say anything to us. When we did this going to the Shabbat, they didn't object. So that seems like they acquiesced to what he was doing and think that it is mutar. Samarlo, misham raya. That's a proof. Shani Beit Nitzeh is resume. Beit Nitzeh is an unusual place because everyone that was found there was someone who was very makpid on keeping Shabbat. They were very careful about these types of issues, and therefore nobody would have taken the fuel from the lamp in this case. But that's not the din in a normal situation. Happens to be in that situation, they let it go. Even though they should have objected, they let it go because they knew nobody was going to touch it. But in reality, the halacha is that you can't do that. And nobody's allowed to do that. So the answer is that it should have applied. They didn't object because they knew nothing would happen, but they should have objected. And we'll see that from the next line in the Gemara. Aven Tzipora. So Aven Tzipora is the name of an individual. Garar Sapsala. He dragged a bench. Be'ilita Deshisha. In a chamber that was paved with marble. Stone. Le'ela mi Rabbi Yitzhak ben Elazar. In front of Rabbi Yitzhak ben Elazar. Amalei. Ishtuke lecha. If I am silent to you. Kishtigilei chavraya l'Rabbi Yehuda. Like the Rabbanan were silent when Rabbi Yehuda did what he did in that Aliyah. Nafik mnei churba. It's going to end up being a disaster. Because even though I know what you did is not problematic in this instance, we are gozer in other instances for it, and therefore if I let it go here, it's going to be a bad situation. Indicating that the Chachamim should have said something to Rabbi Yehuda in the Aliyah, even though they didn't. Even though they knew in this situation it wouldn't be problematic, they should have said something, because Rabbi Yehuda came to the wrong conclusion because of that. Gzeira ilita deshisha to alita de'alma. We have a gzeira that you may not drag a bench across a stone floor because of a normal floor. What's a normal floor? That's made out of dirt. Dirt floors, when you drag the bench across it, you're going to make a charitz in it. So because of that, we don't let you drag on stone floors because we're afraid that if you drag on the stone floors, you also drag when it's not a stone floor. So over here, he says, even though what you did is not problematic inherently, I'm not going to not object to you because I want to object and tell you that we don't allow this anywhere. Reish Kanishta de Batzra, the head of the shul in Batzra. So Reish Kanishta, Rashi says, is the maftir akniyasiot, and he describes it basically as the usher of the shul. Garar safsala le'ela mi Rabbi Yirmiyah Rabbo. He dragged a bench in front of Rabbi Yirmiyah Rabbo. I'm like, come on, who do you hold like? Rabbi Shimon. So the usher says back to him, I hold like Rabbi Shimon. Now Rabbi Shimon we saw earlier in the Gemara, and we're going to see him again many times. He and Rabbi Yehuda disagree about davar she'enu mitkaven. When you don't have intention to do something, is it problematic on Shabbat? Rabbi Shimon believes davar she'enu mitkaven. If you're not mitkaven for it, it's not problematic. Here, when you're dragging the bench, you're not intending to make a charitz, to make a groove in the ground. That's a byproduct of what you're doing. So since it's not what you intend for, mutar. On the other hand, Rabbi Yehuda says, davar she'enu mitkaven is still problematic on Shabbat, and therefore it's not permitted. So when Rabbi Yirmiyah Rabba said to him, how come you're dragging the bench? He says, I hold like Rabbi Shimon. So he says, Ima dama Rabbi Shimon big dolim, dolo efshar. Rabbi Shimon only said his opinion by large benches, where there's no other way to carry them. The only way to carry them is to drag them. They're too heavy. Biktanim, but if you have a small bench where you have an alternative, Miyamar. Who says that? He says over there, you're allowed to drag it. When we say that it's a big one and it makes a charitz, it's not that it's absolutely certain that it'll make a charitz. It could make a charitz in the ground, but it's not certain that that will happen. Upligid ula, this argues on ula. Damar ula, machloke biktanim. Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon only argue about small benches where you have an alternative. Aval bigdolim, when you're talking about large benches, diriya kol mutar. Even Rabbi Yehuda agrees it's mutar there because you have no choice. You need to drag it. It's not certain that you will make a charitz, but you have no other alternative to move the bench, just to drag it along. So those are the two ways to explain the machlok of Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Yehuda. But this objection of Rabbi Yirmiyahu Rabba said to the usher or the caretaker of the shul, don't drag the bench around. You can't drag the bench because it is a small bench, and a small bench, even Rabbi Shimon says, is problematic. So now, the Gemara says, Meitiv Rabbi Yosef, here we bring the bright Rabbi Shimon Omer, Gorer Adam Mitak, Kisev Safsal, person can drag a bed, a chair, a bench, Uvach Lo Yitkaven Lasot Charitz, as long as he doesn't intend to make a groove in the ground. Tani Gdolim, Tani Ktanim. Sorry, the bright that we're quoting over here, for Rabbi Shimon, includes Mitah, Kisev Safsal. That's a range of items from big to small. You have a Kisev, which is small, you have a safsal or mitah, you have big items there too. Sounds like Rabbi Shimon's opinion applies both instances, big and small. So Gemara says, kashul or tavayu. That's a problem for Ula and a problem for Yirmiyahu Rabba. Gemara says, Ula mitaretz l'tamei. Ula has a way to answer it. Rabbi Yirmiyahu Rabba mitaretz l'tamei. Rabbi Yirmiyahu Rabba has a way to answer it. Ula mitaretz l'tamei. Ula says, mita dumi de kisei. Ula said, machlok between him and Rabbi Yehuda only is in ktanim. And therefore that statement of Rabbi Shimon where Rabbi Yehuda argues must be a case of ktanim. How does he make it into a case of ktanim? Says it's a bed that's similar to a chair. Chair is the item that's defining for us the size of the items here. And the mitah and safsal are the same as a chair. They're small. We're talking about a small bed. A small bench. Everything's small in that statement. Yirmiyahu Rabba will say the other way around. Mitaretz l'tamei kisei dumia d'mitah. Mitah is the guide. Mitah is big. And we're talking about a chair. We're talking about a chair that is equivalent in size to a mitah. So we're only talking about big kelim over there. And that's where Rabbi Shimon argues with Rabbi Yehuda. So, Meitiv Rabbo. Mochrei kesut, mochrein kedartcham. People who sell clothing can sell their clothing the way they normally do. Uvach lo yitkaven b'chamah b'pnei chamah. As long as he doesn't intend for the clothing to protect him from the sun, or b'gshamim b'pnei gshamim, or in the rain to protect him from the rain. What we're speaking about here is people who sell clothes, and they have to also sell kilayim. They sell clothing that is kilayim, but they can't wear. The way that they used to show the customers what it looked like, they used to put it on themselves. They used to wear the beggar that they're selling to show what it looked like. Their own models of their clothing, their own mannequins. So now, in putting on this clothing, they're wearing kilayim. So Rabbi Shimon Meshitato says, if it's a davar sheino mitkaven, then it's fine. Over here, when you're wearing clothing, do you intend the clothing to be for utility as clothing? No. You're simply wearing them to show the other people. So therefore, as long as you don't wear them to protect you from the sun or the rain, then it's not intentional wearing. Not intentional wearing is considered to be permissible. Vatz nuim mafshilim b'makel l'achureyem. And those that are tsanua, meaning those that are very careful doing mitzvot, they used to use a stick. They'd hold up the clothing on them with a stick so they didn't actually wear it. Even though technically it was mutar, if they were not mitkavein, they didn't want to even get involved. So they used to hold it up on a stick next to them so they weren't actually physically wearing it. They have kilayim in their store that they're selling. They're wearing clothing that's not kilayim, and now they want to show, demonstrate for other people this kilayim baget. They're selling to non-Jews. Now, they can't wear this as their clothing. They're wearing clothing, and on top of their clothing, they put this item on. That's a case the efshel ma'aved kitznuim. You have the opportunity to do it like the tznuim, to put it up on the stick. And yet, tichik tanim dami, and that's like the equivalent to ktanim, v'chilo mikavein, shari Rabbi Shimon l'chatila. And even though that's the fact, Rabbi Shimon says, no problem, put it on and you can wear it, no problem. Yufta to Rabbi Yirmiyahu Rabba to Yufta. That really undermines Rabbi Yirmiyahu Rabba's position, because Rabbi Yirmiyahu Rabba says when you have the possibility of doing it otherwise, you have to take that opportunity. Rabbi Shimon only said by Gdolim according to Rabbi Yirmiyahu Rabba, but if it's Ketanim, you'd have to carry it instead of dragging it. Over here we have a case where you have an alternative. The alternative is to put it up on a stick. And yet, Rabbi Shimon says, if you put it on, it's fine. You're allowed to do it. Only the Tzduim did it that way. But anybody else, they put it on and it wasn't a problem because it's Davar Sheino Mitkaven. So you see that Rabbi Yirmiyahu and Rabbi Rabba's qualification, Rabbi Shimon, is not right. That Rabbi Shimon says his opinion, whether you have an alternative or not an alternative, as long as you're not mitkaven, as long as you're not intending for the outcome, you are fine. And therefore, maybe Ula's distinction could be right, but Rabbi Yirmiyahu Abba's distinction is clearly not correct. Just going to go a drop further here, only because tomorrow's daf is very long. Try to get to the two dots on the top of Lama, which is a mechabet aner, b'nei shu'i mitirei b'nei nechrim, b'nei listim, b'nei ruach ra. Someone extinguishes the candle because he's afraid of the non-Jews. They have a holiday where you're not allowed to light candles in your house. So he extinguishes it because he's afraid. B'nei listim, he's afraid of the marauders, thieves coming in. Dei ruach ra is affected by a bad spirit and having the light on is difficult for him. Or is that somebody's sick there needs to sleep. Patur. He's patur. Patur again in Mishnah means patur aval asur. He shouldn't be doing it. Tur min doraita asur min de rabbanan. Chasal aner. If the reason he's extinguishing it is because he's afraid it's going to burn the lamp and ruin the lamp. Chasal Hashem, he's afraid of losing the oil. Chasal aptila, he's afraid of losing the wick. Chayav. In that case, he's chayav because his intention for extinguishing is not because of any fear, it's because he wants to protect the objects there. It's a monetary decision. Biosi puter b'chulan chutz min aptila. Biosi says, all of these are patur, even in the latter cases, except for the case where he's trying to save the wick. Because when you extinguish the wick, it's good for a coal. It's good for coal now, and you've made it into something that is useful. So now the Gemara asks, Mikdani Seifa Chayav, because the Seifa, the latter half of that mission says, you're Chayav, Shmamina Rabbi Yehuda. Clear that this is the position of Rabbi Yehuda, because Rabbi Yehuda is the only one who thinks that Bachash and Tzricha Gufa is problematic. Over here, when you extinguish it, you don't extinguish it because you want to extinguish it. You extinguish it to save something else. That's called Malacha Shein Tzricha Gufa. It's the malacha that was done in the Mishkan, but it's not for the same outcome that you want in the Mishkan. The reason you extinguish in the Mishkan is because you want it out. You want to extinguish it. The reason that you're extinguishing here is to protect the other object. So in malacha shein tzricha d'gufa, Rabbi Shimon believes you're patur of al asur, and Rabbi Yehuda believes that you are chayav. The fact that the letter of our Mishnah says chayav means that Rabbi Yehuda is the author of our Mishnah. Now, if Rabbi Yehuda is the author of our Mishnah, reisha b'maya sikna. What's the case in the reisha? The case where you're putting it out because of the chole and all those other items there. If it's a chole sheyesh bo sakana, if it's a chole that's endangered to life and limb, mutar mi ba'ilei. It should say mutar. Everybody agrees if there's danger to life that you're allowed to extinguish it. That's not a question. Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Shimon, doesn't matter. It should say mutar, not patur. Vive chole sheyesh bo sakana. If it's a chole that's not endangered to life and limb, chayav chatat mi ba'ilei. It should be chayav chatat. Over there, you're doing the same problem as the latter half of the Mishnah, which is what's malachu shein tzricha d'gufa. You're extinguishing it, not for the purpose of extinguishing it, but for some other reason, so the sick person can sleep, so that nachrim don't come. You're not in danger of life and limb. So if you do that, according to Yehuda, you'd be chayav chatat, like the latter half of the Mishnah. So how come the first half of the Mishnah says patur? Patur doesn't work according to Rabbi Yehuda. It should either be mutar or chayav. There should be no patur in the first half of the Mishnah. Gemara says, "Lo'olam b'chole sheyesh bo sakana." We're talking about a chole that is deathly ill. Ubudu'inu delitnei mutar. You're right. The first half of the Mishnah said it should have used the word mutar. Va'aydi debay lemitnei seif chayav tani nami reisha patur. Because the latter half of the Mishnah is chayav for literary balance. In the Mishnah, they put patur and chayav. Really, it should be mutar and chayav. But for that literary style and balance, they kept it as patur and chayav. Fatani raboshaya im bishvila chole shisha no yichbe. If it's for the chole to sleep, then you should not extinguish it. Vim gaba patur aval asur. If you do extinguish it, it's patur but asur. Mar says, hayi b'chole shein bo sakana for Rabbi Shimoni. That opinion of raboshaya is a case where it's a chole that is not in danger of life or limb, and it's according to Rabbi Shimon. Our Mishnah is clearly Rabbi Yehuda, so you can't explain it that way in our Mishnah. You can't explain the Mishnah as according to Rabbi Shimon, because Rabbi Yehuda is clearly the author of the Mishnah, because of the latter half of the Mishnah. Once Rabbi Yehuda is the latter half of the Mishnah, the author of the latter half, he has to be the author of the first half. Being the author of the first half, it should have said mutar, because we're talking about danger to life and limb. So therefore, the patur is lav dafka in the Mishnah, it really means mutar. But in the case of Rabbi Ushayu, who makes a statement independently, and says that, when you extinguish for a cholet, extinguishing for a chole is patur aval asur. There we can say it's according to Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Shimon says that it's a melacha shein tzricha legufa, and melacha shein tzricha legufa, according to Rabbi Shimon, is patur aval asur. And Rabbi Hoshaya is subscribing to that position of Rabbi Shimon and melacha shein tzricha legufa. And that's why in the Mishnah, the only case where you have a melacha shein tzricha legufa by kiboy, when you extinguish something, the only time that you actually extinguish it for the purpose of extinguishing it, is either pechamim, to make coals, and that's what the Mishnah says over there, that Rabbi Yossi says, that the only case where you're going to be chayav is when you extinguish it for pichamim, when you made it into a coal. Because then the purpose of extinguishing is for the same reason they used in the Mishkan. They extinguish to have the coal, to have the blackened substance afterwards. Or, if you extinguish it when you are singeing the wick. You light the wick in order to singe it, to burn it, but you don't want it to burn the wick out. You want it simply to singe it. In that case, when you extinguish it again, it's for the purpose of the wick itself. Those are the only two cases where you can have what's called malacha shetzricha de gufa by kibui. Kibui always will be malacha shetzricha de gufa, which is that when you extinguish it, it's not for the purpose of extinguishing it, it's for some other reason. Because of that, it's always malacha shetzricha de gufa, and you have the machloket. The Biyuda in that case says, you're a chayav. B'Shimon says, you're patur of al asur. The only two cases where even Rabbi Shimon will agree that it's problematic is a case where you extinguish it for the purpose that was done in the Mishkan. It's either to create a pecham, to create a coal, or you extinguish it to singe the ptila. In both those cases, the extinguishing is the purpose there. The extinguishing is why you want to extinguish it, is to create exactly what you do by extinguishing it. That's considered malacha shel gufa, and even Rabbi Shimon would agree in that case that you're chayav chatat, because that is malacha shetzricha legufa. That's the way the malacha was done in the Mishkan, and for the purpose done in the Mishkan, and that's why you'd be chayav. Malacha shetzricha legufa is where you do the same action as the Mishkan, but for a different reason, a different purpose. That'll be all the other cases in the Mishnah. Rabbi Yehuda will say chayav, Rabbi Shimon will say patur v'alasur, and that's why Rabbi Yehuda is the author of our Mishnah. Okay, we'll stop here.